Deng Xiaoping promised the Chinese people, the world, and the United States, and me personally, was openness and reform. And they have had tremendous reform within China.
Reflecting back on 40 years of U.S.-China detente, it's Friday, January 25th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, the U.S. shutdown going nowhere fast, turmoil in Venezuela, and using robots to guard what's valuable. That's all ahead on today's VOA Asia. As the partial U.S. government shutdown continues into a second month, President Donald Trump has yielded to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi in their own showdown. Mr. Trump will delay giving his annual State of the Union address until after he and Congress resolve the shutdown. AP's Sagar Magani reports.
It's called the State of the Union. It's in the Constitution. We're supposed to be doing it.
But he won't be doing it while the government remains shut down. Ending a week-long stare-down, the president has conceded after Pelosi told him he would not be allowed to address a joint session of Congress until the government reopens, denying him permission to speak in the House chamber.
It's a very, very negative part of history.
The president at first said he'd find another venue, but admitted last night nothing can compete with the chamber, and he'll give the address after the nation's longest shutdown ends. Sagar Magani, Washington.
As the shutdown shows little signs of solution, neither side can be sure about the long-term political fallout. Public opinion polls show more Americans blame President Trump than opposition Democrats at the moment, and the standoff is already serving as a likely blueprint for the 2020 presidential election battle. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has that story.
Government workers line up for free groceries in Washington, a helping hand at a time of need. There's no end in sight to the partial government shutdown, and politically, both sides appear to be dug in. President Trump remains adamant about funding for a wall along the southern border.
Well, I hope that Speaker Pelosi can come along and realize what everybody knows. I mean, no matter who it is, they know that walls work, and we need walls.
Democrats remain firmly opposed to wall funding, including Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer.
We want the symbol of America to remain the Statue of Liberty, freedom, equality, not a divisive wall. And we will fight for that. Fight for that we will.
Those who remain caught in the middle are government workers, either on furlough or working without pay, like FBI agent Tom O'Connor.
FBI agents should not have to go work at a store stocking shelves because they can't feed their families on their government job.
Politically, the shutdown helps no one, says Jim Kessler.
Trump is losing on this, Congress is losing on this, and then federal workers who are without pay are losing on this.
Several recent polls have put more of the blame for the shutdown on Trump, says John Fortier.
I mean, public opinion polls, I think, are more against the president than against the Democrats. His numbers have suffered, but just a small amount. And so I think the both sides feel their bases are committed to these differences in principle, and that makes solving this much more difficult.
Democrats also appear unified to defy the president, says Jim Kessler.
Democrats aren't really eager to fund a campaign promise of Donald Trump that he said Mexico was going to pay for. And so we're locked in a duel right now, and somebody's going to have to blink or find a creative way out.
For the moment, neither side appears willing to budge, notes Larry Sabato.
It's hard to see how it will end, but it's bound to end. And both sides will have to give something. Exactly what they'll give is just a question mark right now.
Analysts predict the shutdown impasse could define divided government over the next 2 years and also serves as a likely preview of the next presidential campaign in 2020. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
With paychecks going missing for federal workers, food banks and other support organizations across the country are stepping in to help. VOA's Asli Pellit went to a pop-up food pantry in New York City where furloughed workers got groceries, personal care products, and information about other resources. VOA's Faith Lapidus brings us her story.
The people who came to Barclays Center went home with pasta, sausages, chicken, produce, and milk, donated by Stop and Shop vendors.
So we have onions and potatoes in here that we repacked this weekend for an MLK Day of Service.
The giveaway was organized by Food Bank for New York City, which provides emergency food assistance to 1 in 5 New Yorkers.
What we're finding is, as a result of the shutdown, we now are serving newly vulnerable families, families who never would have envisioned that they would need emergency food assistance or support.
The location of this pop-up pantry at the Barclays Center, the sports and entertainment arena, was carefully chosen.
As we recognize that sometimes there is a stigma. There's a stigma with getting access to emergency food assistance and other supports. And so we thought, what better than to take an iconic New York City location, a location that families may have come to and attended in the past and enjoyed a game or enjoyed a concert, and to say, this will be your introduction to the emergency feeding network.
Within just the first hour, 150 furloughed workers came through the food bank, walking past tables covered with plastic bags filled with produce, dry goods, and protein, as well as milk and bread. They all said it will make a big difference.
I appreciate this food bank today from at the Barclays Center, because at least for the next few days, I have something to cook for me and my child.
We have savings, but it's only much that we could crunch, you know, so I did save some money for rainy days, but like, it's already more, it's going to be a month already, and we don't know how long this is going to last, so is becoming, whatever I got saved is becoming a little bit less and less every day.
Organizers say if the partial government shutdown continues, they will continue giving out basic foods to furloughed workers at different locations around New York every week. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. A party-backed tabloid in China has warned that the extradition battle over Huawei's chief financial officer is likely to be drawn out and complex. Police in northeastern India say they have arrested 61 Rohingya Muslims this week, amid reports that more than 1,300 have crossed the border into Bangladesh. The former governor of the Indonesian capital of Jakarta, known by the name Ahok, is free after spending nearly 2 years in prison on blasphemy. And U.S. President Donald Trump has criticized U.S. generals for not defeating Taliban insurgents in Afghanistan after 19 years of involvement. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. And VOA Asia continues. North Korea's official news agency says the country has started preparing for a second summit between leader Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump. AP's Charles de Ledesma reports that the two countries remain at odds, however, over several issues.
The North state media says Kim Jong-un will wait with patience and in good faith to work towards a common goal with Donald Trump. Despite Kim's determination for another meeting with the president, the two remain at odds over fundamental issues, notably denuclearization. Trump has said they will probably meet again around the end of February, but hasn't said exactly when and where the summit would take place. Experts say a major sticking point is what denuclearization steps Kim should take to move forward stalled nuclear negotiations, and what rewards President Donald Trump should provide to push Kim to take those measures. Nuclear negotiations have been stuck since Kim and Trump met in Singapore last June for their first summit, which ended with vague denuclearization pledges from Kim. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Happening now in Asia, major stock markets ended mixed on Wednesday. The Shanghai Composite and Shenzhen Component both saw slight gains. The Shenzhen Composite rose 0.129%, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng saw fractional losses. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. 40 years ago, U.S. President Jimmy Carter negotiated and signed a historic deal with China, which normalized diplomatic relations between the two nations. But in the decades since, China's enormous economic growth and last year's U.S. trade sanctions against Beijing have both nations keeping a wary eye on each other. VOA's Robert Rafael explains.
4 decades after signing the pact, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter sat down with VOA's Greta Van Susteren for an exclusive interview. Mr. Carter cites the 1979 agreement as a lasting success.
What Deng Xiaoping promised the Chinese people, the world, and the United States, and me personally, was openness and reform. And they have had tremendous reform within China. There was zero free enterprise in China before that. And after that, China's become a very dynamic, open society as far as commerce and trade is concerned.
He disagrees with the Trump administration's sanctions against Beijing, but points to Chinese concessions to the U.S. since last year's G20 summit in Argentina.
China has agreed to do 2 or 3 things. One is to buy more soybeans. And I think they've made 2 purchases of a major size of American soybeans. They've also promised to open up investment opportunities by American corporations in China. When we don't get along with China, it hurts both of us, not just us, not just China, but also it hurts the United States economically.
But China expert Christopher Johnson feels President Trump made a mistake by withdrawing the U.S. from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, also known as TPP.
Fundamentally, most of the challenges we're facing in the bilateral economic and trade relationship with China right now were addressed in some way or another in TPP, especially the key issues with regard to subsidies to state-owned enterprises, issues like forced technology transfer, things with regard to intellectual property rights protection. The bigger piece of it was a lot of other countries as well, and that always tends to work well with China. When a group of countries come to them with a concern, they tend to be far more responsive.
As for the immediate future of U.S.-China relations?
In the short term, I'm concerned. I think, you know, we are experiencing a definite deterioration in the overall strategic relationship, arguably the worst we've seen in a very long time. These economic and trade frictions really are just a symptom of the broader disease, which is how are we going to get along with each other globally, these two big powers.
Johnson adds Washington-Beijing relations are critical to another U.S. concern, convincing North Korea to denuclearize. Robert Rafael, VOA News.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time Saturdays and Sundays on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Google is bankrolling a 10-megawatt solar farm in Taiwan, whose 40,000 panels will hang over commercial fish ponds, compensating with renewable generation for some of the energy consumed by the country's data center about 100 kilometers to the north. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. Amid ongoing deadly violence in Afghanistan, the country's chief executive, Abdullah Abdullah, is calling on the U.S. and the world not to give up on his people. President Donald Trump has repeatedly expressed frustration with the 17-year-old U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan and is considering a major withdrawal of troops, with the Taliban carrying out daring attacks while holding peace talks with U.S. officials. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Just days after a deadly, brazen Taliban attack on Afghanistan's intelligence agency base, Afghan chief executive Abdullah Abdullah told the World Economic Forum in Davos Wednesday that the world cannot give up on his war-torn country.
My point, altogether, to our friends and partners which have made sacrifices, and blood and treasure has been throughout that, don't lose patience. It's easier said to be done, but it's working. It's working. We all made mistakes in the past 18 years. We shouldn't blame those mistakes on the people of Afghanistan.
Earlier this month, U.S. President Donald Trump questioned ongoing U.S. involvement in Afghanistan and whether other countries should be doing more.
But why isn't Russia there? Why isn't India there? Why isn't Pakistan there? Why are we there? We're 6,000 miles away.
Taliban officials this week said they engaged in a new round of peace talks with a U.S. delegation led by U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan Political Reconciliation, Zalmay Khalilzad. Afghanistan's former Deputy Interior Minister says the main condition of any such talks should be a ceasefire.
If the main and first condition for talks is not a ceasefire, then it is not acceptable for the people of Afghanistan, because we have been suffering and getting killed for the last 40 years in the name of peace, and we cannot take the burden of suffering for the next coming 40 years for the cause.
Media reports have said President Trump is considering a plan to pull out nearly half of the 14,000 American troops stationed in Afghanistan. Brookings Institution's Madia Asfal says the reported move gives the Taliban an advantage in the talks.
Right now, a lot of the bargaining power is on the Taliban side because the U.S. has already indicated that it will start withdrawing troops, even though the Taliban had set that as a precondition for talks as well.
The Taliban has refused to negotiate directly with the Afghan government, insisting on holding talks with the U.S. first. Cindy Sane, VOA News, the State Department.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Hong Kong is set to present a controversial bill to lawmakers that prescribes jail terms of up to 3 years for anyone disrespecting the Chinese national anthem. That's a move that critics say raises fresh fears over freedom of expression in the city. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, cameras and alarms keep offices and warehouses safe worldwide. But a new kind of security guard is making the rounds, looking for anything that is unusual. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports.
Roaming the cubicles, being alert, checking for anything out of the ordinary. That's the job of a security guard, including this one.
It's basically the combination of incredible sensing and an autonomous car that moves through your indoor spaces. It builds models of what is normal and then looks for anomalies. It does that by using a whole vast array of sensing.
Travis Dial created Cobalt, which looks like a moving piece of office furniture. Beneath its soft fabric exterior is a roving security system equipped with more than 60 sensors that pick up heat, moisture, smoke, people. Cameras all the way around give it eyes everywhere. Microphones track unusual sounds.
Everything else is basically like an autonomous car. So, you know, depth cameras and other sensors that can detect obstacles so that the robot can safely move through these indoor spaces.
As it moves, Cobalt builds a model of the indoor space. Then the robot looks for things that aren't right. A stranger in the office, a spill, an open door or window. It picks up carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide leaks, and it knows if the Wi-Fi is down. If Cobalt notices anything strange, it contacts an off-site security specialist who comes on the screen to resolve the issue. Today, that's Bogdan.
Hi, Travis. Do you mind badging in for me, please?
Absolutely.
Great, thank you.
As the robot's navigating through the space, it'll start to say, hey, I think I see a person, a potential, you know, intruder. It's flagging those people to Bogdan.
Security guards of the future may be something like Cobalt, a machine that roams the halls during the off hours, but relies on human intelligence when it needs help. Michelle Quinn, VOA News, San Francisco.
This is Science in a Minute.
A recent U.S.-Dutch study outlined evidence that the Antarctic ice sheet is losing about 6 times the ice each year than it did back 40 years ago. Now, another new study suggests that accelerating ice melt is also taking place in Greenland, which is mostly located within the Arctic Circle. The study proposes that Greenland ice is melting faster than had been thought and that it could lead to a faster rise in sea level. The researchers place the blame of the accelerated ice loss on what they call the increasing warming of Earth's atmosphere. Since most of southwest Greenland, the area the researchers focused on, doesn't have glaciers, the study proposes that the lost ice must be actual surface ice. The study found that the largest continuous loss of Greenland ice took place from early 2003 to mid-2013. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We close today with the story of national turmoil. Just in this case, not the United States. Venezuela's opposition party is trying to push the elected president, Nicolas Maduro, from office. Opposition leader Juan Guaido has declared himself interim president, and several nations in the Western Hemisphere have declared their support for Guaido, including now the United States. White House senior correspondent Patsy Wicca-Utsuwara spoke with our Jim Bertel about the fluid situation.
Well, yesterday, President Trump tweeted that the citizens of Venezuela have suffered for too long at the hands of the illegitimate Maduro regime. So in that tweet, he essentially recognizes Juan Guaido, the president of the Venezuelan National Assembly, as the interim president of Venezuela. The White House then followed with a formal statement, and not long after that, we saw other countries doing the same thing, including Canada, Colombia, Brazil, Panama, and Argentina. We can also see from the day before when Vice President Mike Pence in a video declared support of the United States for the Venezuelan people, especially for the planned mass protests against Maduro. And we also know that since Maduro's inauguration on January 10th, the U.S. and the other countries in the Organization of American States Permanent Council have voted not to recognize Maduro's new term. So there's a gradual ramping up, and it escalated yesterday into this big diplomatic crisis that we are in now.
Well, Maduro has ordered all personnel at the U.S. Embassy to leave the country within 72 hours.
Yes.
The U.S. has said he doesn't have the authority to do that. So how likely is a confrontation between the U.S. and Venezuela?
Well, right now we are in a very fast-moving diplomatic crisis. It's very fluid. Whether or not it would devolve into a military confrontation obviously depends on a lot of factors, and I can't say for sure. But we know that yesterday when President Trump was asked if he was considering military force, he said, we're not considering anything, but all options are always on the table. And he said that several times, all options are always on the table. And I feel that this was somewhat of an escalation from last week when I spoke with a senior administration officials who said that all options are on the table except military. At that time, they were still just considering the economic and diplomatic toolbox, including, you know, more sanctions or oil embargo. And what they're doing now is certainly putting more pressure on Maduro, because now governments and companies and international organizations will channel aid through the National Assembly, which will mean a very big blow to the Maduro regime, because international aid, as you know, is one of its major source of income.
Well, now, whatever steps the U.S. takes will not take place in a vacuum. You've got Russia and China, who are supporters of Maduro. How have they reacted to Washington's moves?
Well, Russia has warned for Washington not to intervene militarily in Venezuela, saying that it would trigger a catastrophe, and Moscow is saying that it would stand with Venezuela to protect its sovereignty. China is also calling out the U.S. to stay out, saying it opposes all outside intervention in Venezuela. And as you know, both of these countries have given the Maduro regime tens and billions of dollars, and they have both invested heavily in Venezuela. And so this is a huge political gamble, a geopolitical gamble for Beijing and Moscow. And analysts have warned that this could be the next hotspot for the world's big players in their quest to expand their sphere of influence.
And with that, we leave it there for you this week and today. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you again on Monday.